This is Perth Tonight with Chris Elsley.
Oh, I find myself wondering if a month has gone past already. I know that it has, so we're back to Perth Tonight Spotlight. And somebody whose name you will instantly know, Barry Cable, joins us. And Barry, of course, was a career footballer and certainly had some amazing highlights. He had successful in the Waffle, played in premiership teams there, did what people would have dreamt of in the time, played with a premiership team in the VFL. In fact, he was somebody who definitely reached the pinnacle of his football career and at one stage was even reprimanded by his headmaster for dedicating far too much time to playing football. But then again, our movie critic was once reprimanded by his headmaster for spending too much time at the movies. So maybe there's a message in there. Barry Cable, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much, Chris.
You found yourself in a situation where your mother was widowed.
My mother, unfortunately, my father passed away when I was six, and there was six boys and the five girls. There was 11 of us, and I was the baby.
Were you the only one in the family that was drawn to footy?
At that level, yes. I think the others kicked the ball around a bit, but never sort of had the same intentions of doing what I was about to do, which was to really dedicate it.
Did you have that ambition to dedicate it, or did footy really just start out as a game that you liked to play, so you played it?
Well, I think it's a bit of both. I think as a youngster, you kick it around. In those days too, you've got to remember, I was in the country, and in those days, the spotlight really was on footy in the winter, cricket in the summer. And so the winter came, all the boys, we just got around together and started kicking the ball around a lot. And, from there, it just developed from there. They asked you to join teams as juniors, and that's how it was, And I was always had that idea of, wanting to do really well.
You have to tell us the story about the headmaster reprimanding you for spending far too much time with football and not enough time with your head in books, obviously.
Yeah, that was at primary school. The headmaster called me over and gave me a bit of a... told me to go up to the office, and because the old story is you start figuring out, why you're being asked to go up to the office. It's a bit nervous as a 12-year-old, 11-year-old. But anyway, I went up there and, he sat me down and we had a great chat, or he did. I didn't say much, as you could appreciate. And he felt that, I should put a little bit more studies together and probably put a bit more energy into studying rather than putting so much energy into me footy.
What did your mother say to you? Because obviously you'd have gone home and said, "Mum, guess what?"
In those days too, a lot of the mums and the dads, and particularly the mothers in my case, they were with the teachers. You should do what they're telling you to do. But unfortunately, I had other ideas, and I just really wanted to put a lot more energy into the football side of things.
I suppose in those days too, people didn't view football as a career in the way that players do now, did they?
No, absolutely not. No, we're a mile away from it, because I was born in the 40s, of course, and then the 50s came along, and I was sort of a youngster in that era, which was really where I got a lot of my skills in that from, like kicking, handling the ball all the time. Then, had the opportunity to go down to Perth at the end of 61.
Did you go to Perth specifically to play football? Was that your driving ambition?
Yeah.
Or was it something else that took you to Perth initially?
It was the footy that took me there. I was an apprentice butcher in Narrogin and played the footy. And there was quite a few people there that said, you really should, try yourself out at league level. And there was a couple of fellas that came down. Bert Sykes, one from the Perth Footy Club, he came down to Narrogin and he was the manager of the Repco Centre that they had there where they opened a shop there. Plus he coached the Imperial Footy Club that I played for. He felt that maybe I should come down and try myself out at the Perth Footy Club. So it really was all about footy, even though, like you say, there was no money involved. It was really just a matter of, if you wanted to play.
And, of course, what you would do is hold down a regular job through the week and play at weekends, even in the city, as you had done in the country.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. It was a lot harder in those days in that sense because, you're right, you had to make a living. And, of course, I met my wife in Narrogin as well. As we were school sweethearts, I suppose you could say. And we, back in 1958, been together for over, 56 years now. So it's been a long journey and Helen's been with me all the way and it's been really terrific.
How did the family feel, for example, your new wife, when you said, something, I'm going to pursue this football? It's not like now, where somebody would say, gee, if he's successful at this, he's going to make a pretty good living. It's, okay, how are you going to do this and how are we going to eat?
That was always a talking point. We got on really well in that sense and Helen always looked at it mainly from my point of view, which was fantastic of her to do that. Virtually allowed me to really have a go at the footy, which she appreciated. It was something that I really loved and really wanted to just see how good I was. And she was quite prepared to back me. which really helped me get where I wanted to get. I mean, without her and her assistance and that looking after the boys, I don't think I would have made it under normal circumstances.
Growing up in a place like Narrogin, you'd know there are lots of farms around, and people used to say that farming's in your blood. So I'm going to ask you, football, is it one of those things that's in your blood and once it's there you just can't get it out?
To be honest, Chris, I really don't know, but I suppose when you look at my career, you could say that somehow I got the bug. I don't know quite how, but yes, I certainly had it from a very, very young age. Always wanted to be, you know, a footy player, always wanted to be a top sportsman. And that was, like I say, that was at that school age where the headmaster had a good chat to me. So it was definitely in the DNA somewhere.
And it's also interesting that nowadays, had you been a student showing those same sort of aptitudes, you would have been encouraged, whereas in those days they were saying, listen, Cable, now you've got to focus on your studies and you're thinking, turn it up, I just want to play footy.
Yeah, well, that was right. Well, I mean, it was the same as when I decided to leave Narrogin. You know, it was, again, it was the old negatives, you know, like, you know, why are you going? Got yourself in a good position now. You're doing an apprenticeship butchering and all of that sort of stuff. So, I mean, why do you want to take a risk and go down to the city and maybe, you know, get injured and then all of a sudden you're sort of back to square one? So it's a usual old story. In that case, it was a bit of the more the negative rather than the positive.
Yeah, you struck me as a person who was never clearly influenced by other people. You were influenced by what you wanted to do and you always followed your gut and went with it.
That's right, exactly. And to be honest, you're right, that's how it was with me. I had an older brother who fought in the Second World War, and when he came out from the army and got himself organised, he saw me play a few junior games, and then he also said to me, look, I think that you could do very well. I think you've got the ability to do it. It's up to the dedication part now and all of this. And I pretty much had that anyway because, you know, that's the reason why I sort of was so focused on it all, and that's what I did. So I just chased it all the way.
Once your football career was over and you returned to West Australia, you were very much involved with football. And in fact, all your life, you've very much remained in touch with football, haven't you?
I've been basically in touch with it all the time, but I've also done an enormous amount of community work for about all the last 40 years, I suppose, because of my footy, because my footy has helped me so much. And I've been supported and encouraged by the community generally and by people. And I thought, well, if I was going to put something back into it, why shouldn't I do it from a community point of view? So that's also what I've been doing a lot of.
You were drawn to the charity work. You also spent a bit of time on the farm too, didn't you?
Oh, I had a property out at Martin, but that was virtually like just a bit of a hobby farm. Mm. And unfortunately, that's where I had a pretty bad accident.
That's right. That was the tractor accident, wasn't it?
It was,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, at the risk of stating the bleeding obvious, you were extremely lucky to survive that, weren't you?
I was very lucky. I was very lucky to survive it, and I was also even more lucky to keep my right leg, which was just about torn off. The surgeon did a magnificent job, and all the people at the Royal Perth Hospital, they were fantastic. I was really crippled up there for quite some time, in hospital for 4 months and all that business.
Did that change your view on life at all, Barry?
Oh, yeah, because I think you sort of get a reality check, you know, because you, in my case, you know, you played your footy and you did a lot of things and you're sort of looking and you're feeling good about yourself and all of this. And all of a sudden, you know, you get whacked with this and it really brings you back to earth. And then you realise that, you know, there are a lot of things that are not that important in life, you know. And so it really brings you back to level one.
Does that sometimes create a bit of a gap between people who you've associated with? They hold things important that you, after that point, no longer saw as that important?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and I said at the time, I think, and even a little bit after that, it's hard to think that you need something like that to sort of really give you a jolt, you know, and bring you back to earth. But unfortunately, that's what happens. And, you know, a lot of young people today, you know, like they're running around doing all sorts of things, and they just think the world's just going to keep on rolling along beautifully for them. But unfortunately, they're like everyone. Something's going to jolt them at some stage of their life, and they're going to realise that maybe there's a lot of things they're doing or chasing at the moment that are really not that important, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, do you think that people nowadays are well-equipped to deal with that reality? I don't know whether you felt you were any better yourself, but do you think people are being really do adjust to the fact that, hey, you know something, life maybe just isn't going to go exactly as you expected. And what it is you have to be able to deal with those things that you didn't expect.
Yeah, well, that's I always believe that that's one of the greatest things in life. It's not what happens to you, because, believe me, something happens to all of us some stage or other, whether whatever it might be. And so your copper really, you come down with a really thud. It's not what happens to you, because like I said, something will happen to all of us. It's how you handle what happens to you. That's the key to life. It's what happens to you and how you handle it as to whether you can really go on with it and do a good job. That's the secret. Because something definitely will happen, there's no doubt. And that's to everybody, one way or another.
When we look at things like that, would you argue that it's character building, even though that sounds a bit cliche?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But I wouldn't want, as I've said to people and I've spoken to, as you can appreciate, I've gone out to lots of people and spoken to them about it, and they've always asked me about the accident and so forth. And I've, as I've always said to them, you know, I would hate them to go through what I went through to be a better person. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a hell of a way to learn a lesson.
Yeah, exactly. That's dead right.
Just to wrap up, Barry, I know that one thing, of course, that's always been very close to your heart has been Aboriginal issues. Do you feel that, certainly in the areas that you've been involved, we've made progress?
Oh, yes, I think that we have. There's no doubt that we have. But I've always looked at it. My mother was an Aboriginal. My father was English. But I lost my father, unfortunately, when I was six. So I sort of went more with my mother's side. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, it's for all of us to appreciate that at the end of the day, we're all just people. That's it. We're people, as I've always said, two arms, two legs, a head with a brain, and we use it to the best of our ability. And that really is the secret. And to be able to mix and appreciate what's happened to other people and then try to do the right thing, that, you know, that's the key. We can't keep looking back all the time. There's only three places you're in. That's in the past, the now, and the future.
Yep.
And I'd like to think the now is the most important thing to be doing is in the now, because we can actually do something about it. And, you know, the future, hopefully, we'll worry about that when we get there. Yeah, but the past is something that everyone's got a past. We've all got a past. But, you know, we've got to get past that. You've got to keep going.
Very, very interesting to hear you say that. And speaking of keeping going, I see that one of the ways you keep yourself fit in your senior years is you love to ride your cycle.
I do. I do a lot of cycling. I do a lot of gym work. But the cycling is a bit of a worry at the moment. Well, the cycling's always been a worry because, you know, it is dangerous, and particularly on the road. And that goes for both sides. I mean, I know a lot of the people in cars and that carry on about cyclists and all of that. And rightly so in lots of cases, because a lot of cyclists don't do the right thing. You know, they go through red lights and they just don't do the right thing. So, again, I'll say, everybody has to try to do the right thing by everybody. So, in other words, me as a cyclist, I try to be aware of where the traffic is, and if I'm riding on the road, I keep over to the left and give the traffic plenty of room to get past. And then the cars also need to appreciate that bikes don't go as fast as cars, and so they need to be careful because they're driving a vehicle, which means that if there is an accident, they're going to be much better off than the cyclist. The cyclist is always going to come off second best. So when I drive my car, I'm aware of that. Now, maybe that's because I am a cyclist, so I do appreciate a bit more where they're coming from. But at the same time, you know, cyclists also have to behave themselves when they're riding their bikes as well, you know, not try to think they can get away with things.
Barry Cable, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you join us on Perth Tonight Spotlight. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chris.